the Feast of Tabernacles is, first of all, it's 7 days, but then a totally different set of offerings and procedures occurred on the 8th day. The 7 days, everyone was invited. On the 8th day, only those who had lost consciousness of self were invited. So it was that return to innocency. And that's those that are invited to the 8th day ceremony. And the 8th day ceremony, 8 is always, 7 is rest, and 8 is ascension. And so that's the spiritual celebration that's going on. One time we were going to celebrate the 7 days, and only the 8th day was going to be only those that had abandoned themselves. And then we didn't have anybody there, so we decided to. Anyway, it was. No, that was a little bit. That was in my own mind. The booths were important, but now in Israel, and for a long time, the booths are made they're made out of plywood and decorated real fancy, and they're adjacent to the house, so they're connected to the house, and it's like another room in the house. That's what most of them are. Instead of the idea that you make the booth of these certain type of trees. And as the 7 days occur, you watch the leaves wither. And it was decorated with fresh flowers. They too would wither by the end of the 7 days. And so you were exposed, in other words, at the end. I mean, nothing that you normally would have for covering is gone. And so then, hopefully, the booth is burned. But the booth it was not only the people that were in the booth. They built a booth over the altar in the temple. And it had the same dimensions and the same, except there, the Shekinah glory and the cherubim, the two that override, where they didn't have to worry about what highs they built, because the cherubim were already there. And then for the 7 days, there was an incredible ceremony that took place. Part of the group went down to the pool of Siloam, and they followed a priest that had a golden pitcher, and that was filled in a very careful ceremony with the water, the living water out of the spring. And it couldn't be water that came from any place except it couldn't have sat long. It had to be right from the spring. And so each of the 7 days, they had that, and then there's another priest that was doing a bunch of stuff inside the temple, and part of the third of the attendees were with him, and he filled another golden with wine, and it was a particular wine that was carefully it was as careful to be made as was the, or maybe even more so than as was the matzah for Passover. And so these two met at the Watergate, believe it or not, that's what its name is. And then they proceeded to the temple with great joy. Everybody was clapping and happy and singing psalms. And then one got on one end of the altar and another got on the other. And then when parts of Psalm 118 were sung, then they poured the water and the wine into the altar itself. And they did that for the 7 days. And it was so, everybody saw its meaning so carefully that one high priest who had taken over the ceremony of getting the water, he spilled about a third of the water on the ground. It didn't go into the temple. And there was a riot. He was almost killed. He was injured badly. And he, there were six, according to the Talmud, 6,000 people died in the riot that occurred because he spilled some of the water on the ground. Can anybody guess, do you understand why that was so important?
No. Well, the water represented the human race, and perhaps they realized that at some level.
Right. And they realized that they may be part of the one that was spilled. That's the whole point. You understand? Their belief system was so strong that when the high priest spilled the water, some say he did it on purpose. But when he spilled the water, they felt so strongly and knew so critically what it meant. It meant that they thought that they then may not have a chance to enter the promise because the water was spilled, because the water, as Pete said, represented the human race. And then the wine, now comes the wine. On the eighth day ceremony, there's no longer any of that particular ceremony, because on the eighth day there's no more human race in this symbolism. And the eighth day ceremony, only the wine is poured into the altar. And this is a point of time of great joy. It has to do with Isaiah 12 and a bunch of other scriptures that promise this great joy. And they were so used to it and understood it so well that it was a time of massive joy. And all kinds of different psalms were sung by the Levites, especially on the eighth day. And that's when Jesus, on the eighth day, he said, "Why do you have such joy in a little water or wine poured into the altar? But those that believe on me, out of their bellies shall flow rivers of living water." Yeah. So that's a huge, and so by that simple sentence and the structure of the temple, the audio was so good that everybody in that temple would hear that. They heard him say that. But so the no water, you're no longer taking water or making wine. It's out of your belly will flow this river of life-giving water. So that's in a nutshell. Other than the idea that they not only build a booth for the people to live in, or many booths, obviously, but they built a booth over the altar itself. I don't know if we've ever studied that. But then the priests, on the same time, in the same arena that where the people are burning the booth at the end of the seventh day, but before the eighth day starts, it has to be that everybody in that whole area of Israel was burning the booth. But at that time, the priest went around the altar and they beat the altar with the pieces of the booth that had been made for the altar until there was no more leaves left on the altar, and then that was burned too. And so it was the idea that no trace of humanity can enter the promise. No, it's faith alone that we by which we live, and that's heavy. And so the eighth, this ceremony, this ceremony of burning the booth and all the things attendant to it, and then the eighth day, it's the whole gospel in one feast. And so everything and everybody in Israel knew, because it's taught from the beginning, that this was the marriage supper of the bride. This was the reason the temple was built. This is the reason that life existed on earth, was for this marriage supper of the bride. And the ceremony that we do with it turned out that everybody didn't, and this one always bothered me, and I never understood why, but every person in Israel didn't throw the ethrog or the pomegranate at the altar, but a representative portion of them, and we all, because we have such a small group, we all do it, but if I started thinking about it, last night, I guess it was, but how in the world would, you know, several million people throw a pomegranate at the altar? Well, I didn't. So, anyhow. But I don't think we've emphasized enough the joy that was attendant to this feast. It was, again, this feast celebrated, this eighth day feast, not the seven. Everybody's invited to the 7 days. But on the eighth day, only the bride is invited. And there are many, 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 many entrants into the different writings of the Midrash or the Talmud that talk about that. And there's great debates about how many will of all of Israel would be accepted, you know, on the eighth day. And we should have the same debate here. Are you living by faith alone? If not, this ceremony better cause you to maybe take a second look at your life. So, that in general is what my contribution this year to. Anybody have any comments on this?
I'm impressed by the idea that this ceremony was more than just a show.
Yeah.
That they were so invested by their faith, by their belief, and the importance of it, that the idea that they were right, didn't go right, or lose their cool, whatever happened to create that scene.
6,000 people got killed.
Yeah, that demonstrates a level of dependence upon the religious system.
And one thing, they knew what it meant. That's what was important.
Yeah.
Now, from Christ's standpoint, I just love this. The first miracle he did on the feast, it was on the feast of this feast. It was probably the eighth day feast of the feast. I'm sorry, I can't hardly think about this without crying. The first miracle he did, he changed the water into wine, and he revealed the purpose of his coming to change the human race, which is always represented by the water, to the wine, which is the bride, symbolically the bride. And that's why the second of his activities on this feast was when he was transfigured. And then the third is when he yelled at the top of his voice, "Why do you have such pleasure or joy in a little bit of water being poured on the altar? He that believeth on me, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water." All right, let's look at that. Let's go first to the Canaan, the marriage. And I don't have my notes, so I can't remember where it is. Whoever finds it, let me know.
Whoever finds it gets a prize.
Huh?
They get a prize.
Yeah. I share it from John, at least, maybe others, but.
Say that again.
John 2:1.
Yeah, it's John 2, chapter verse 1. Chapter 2, verse 1. And the third day, well, and we're not going to read it, but you should read it. First of all, it was the testimony of John the Baptist, and there are scholars that believe, because it's a different way of writing than everything else in John, it's from John 1:19 to 1:34 was the actual testimony that the guys that were assigned to watch Christ to make sure he didn't cause some trouble. It was the actual testimony that they wrote and had in, and John was able to get that actual testimony. That, you understand what I'm saying? The Pharisees and Sadducees had people monitor him. They were monitoring John the Baptist at this time, but all of the hoopla that happened when Jesus was baptized, that's what they reported. So that just precedes, well, there's that and the first disciples and then the miracle. On the third day, there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. And both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. And when they wanted wine, or when they lacked wine, the mother of Jesus saith unto him, they have no wine. And Jesus saith unto her, woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. Now that's not a very good family value thing. But anyway, his mother saith unto the servants, whatever he says unto you, do it. And there were set there 6 water pots of stone, after the manner of the purifying of the Jews, containing 2 or 3 firkins apiece. Anybody know what a firkin is?
No.
It's a pot of water.
Yeah, some size pot.
Or no.
A large pot. I don't know.
1 firkin equals 9 gallons.
Well,
I thought you'd be impressed that I knew that.
That's impressive.
It says here 18 to 27.
Huh?
It says in my notes 18 to 27 gallons.
Well, that was 3 times it.
Just saying.
But that's 3 firkins.
2 or 3 firkins apiece, 18 or 27 gallons.
Yeah, that's the total.
Oh, I see. 9 times 2, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Check it out.
And Jesus saith unto them, fill the water pots with water. And they filled them up to the brim. And he saith unto them, draw out now and here, and bear unto the governor of the feast. And they bear it. In other words, they took those pots of stone. And when the ruler of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine, and knew not whence it was, but the servants which drew the water knew, the governor of the feast called the bridegroom, and saith unto him, every man at the beginning doth set forth good wine, and when men have well drunk, then the wine which is worse, but thou hast kept the good wine until now. And this beginning of miracles did Jesus in Canaan of Galilee, and manifested forth his glory, and his disciples believed on him. And after this he went down to Capernaum, he and his mother and his brethren and all the disciples, and his disciples, after they continued there, and they continued there not many days. The point of it, everything, this was done on the third day of the Feast of Tabernacles. So now let's look and see what he did next. No, and it defined what God had sent him to do. Change the water into wine. All right. The next one is I'm not in my good memory stage here. Matthew. Somebody find Transfiguration.
Matthew 17.
I would have gotten it pretty soon because I'm going through Matthew. All right, this is the second Feast of Tabernacles. After 6 days, Jesus taketh Peter and James and John, his brother, and bringing them up into a high mountain apart. And he was transfigured before them, and his face did shine as the sun, and his raiment was white as the light. And behold, there appeared unto them Moses and Elijah talking with him. Then answered Peter and said unto Jesus, Lord, it is good that for us to be here. If thou wilt, let us make here three tabernacles, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. And while he yet spake, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them. And behold, a voice out of the cloud which said, This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Hear you him. And when his disciples heard it, they fell on their face and were sore afraid. And Jesus came and touched them and said, Arise and be not afraid. And when they had lifted up their eyes, they saw no man save Jesus only. And they came down from the mountain, and Jesus charged them, saying, Tell the vision to no man until the Son of Man be risen again from the dead. Now, Moses and Elijah, it says in the other place where it is, which... Mark. Well, anyway, we don't worry. Just believe me. They talked of Jesus' death. Here's Moses and Elijah, the only two men in the universe that have never died. No, that's not true. The two men in the universe that never died were
who? Enoch and Elijah.
Enoch and Elijah. So, but anyway, Moses represented the law, and Elijah represented all of the prophets. And so he's saying that the purpose of the law and the purpose of the prophets is your death, which is to be accomplished in Jerusalem. So that's the second thing that happened on the Feast of Tabernacles. Okay? Now the third. And I don't have it in my, I don't have the mark here. So somebody find out of his belly, I'll find it. I had no idea I was going to talk about this morning. I had a whole other thing mapped out. So that's what I get for mapping things out.
John chapter 7:38.
No, let's look at the one in Luke 4, I think it is. No, that's not it. John 7, right? John 7.
37 to 38.
Well, 7:35. Then said the Jews among themselves, Whither will he go? That we shall not find him. And he said unto the dispersed among them, Gentiles, they're saying to themselves, to the dispersed among the Gentiles and teach the Gentiles, What manner of saying is this, that he said, ye shall seek me and shall not find me? And where I am, there you cannot be. And it came the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, if any man thirst, let us come unto me and drink. And he that believeth on me, as the scripture hath said, out of his belly shall flow rivers of living water. All right? So that's the three things that he did on this feast. First, the one that just gets me when you think about the majesty of it, about the first miracle at Cana. And then, I am so thankful that we were able to find out. Take a lot of time in reading, but we can place Jesus and what he did at each of the feasts, and that's pretty special. Anybody have any more thoughts? Can you get a little bit excited about the Feast of Tabernacles?
Yeah.
Can you partake of the joy by abandoning yourself? Can you be those of the wine and not of the water? Amen? Why did he do that? Why does changing the water into wine mean that?
That's our salvation. We're mixed with eternity, transformed.
Well. This is why it's so important when we do the afkumen to see that every time that you eat any kind of solid food, in my opinion, you should say, blessed art thou, Lord our God, King of the universe, who bringeth forth bread from the earth. So that it sanctifies the things that you're eating into part of the mystery. And then anytime you drink anything, whether it be coffee or wine or water, or whiskey, I don't care what it is, you say the same thing, and you don't have to say it out loud, but say it internally. Blessed art thou, Lord our God, King of the universe, who what?
Creates
the fruit of the vine. So we have all of the solid food you eat, blessed by his coming forth from the earth. And we have the wine, really, you got it. The understanding of the wine causes you to know that that is your only worth, and your ideas of having any other worth are meaningless. You understand that? Your worth as a believer has nothing to do with anything else except the water being transformed into wine.
It's the process of being grafted into the vine.
Hmm?
The process of being grafted into the vine.
Yeah, that's the part that hurts.
Yeah.
But the end result is what I'm concerned with. That's what, and so you see the end. It's like you preach the cross. You don't preach how do you get to the cross or how the things about the cross. And you preach the end by understanding the seventh day is the wine. Amen? Anything else? Anybody else get wet? Is it raining now again?
It looks like.
Anyway, take it, big guy, without getting wet.